Good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Cochran, Judge Johnson, Judge Halbrooks, Honorable Jean M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. As you know, we are proceeding by Zoom today. For purposes of the recording, today is February 27th, 2024. We have four cases on our calendar today. The same procedural rules apply to our Zoom hearings as apply to our in-person hearings. Each party will have 15 minutes for your oral argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. You should be able to see the clock in the grid view. And we ask that counsel introduce yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument. First case on our calendar today is A23-0746, State of Minnesota versus Elvis Jocko Port. And if I mispronounced appellant's name, please correct me. Thank you. You can proceed when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Sarah Eitnauer. I'm an attorney at the Office of the Appellate Public Defender, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Elvis Porte. Mr. Porte asked this court to reverse the district court's denial of his motion for a downward durational departure. While the district court has broad discretion to determine sentencing, here, the court abused that discretion by not granting the downward durational departure to 57 months because this offense was controlled by law enforcement, making it less serious than typical and providing a substantial and compelling reason to grant that departure. Mr. Porte's conduct here was significantly less serious than typically involved because it's clear from the record that the state's agent, the CRI, determined the amount of the sale, thus determining the degree of the offense. A 57-month sentence is the presumptive duration of a third-degree offense, giving Mr. Porte the benefit of a lesser count at sentencing due to the state's decision to seek out the purchase of a higher sale amount in conducting the buy. The fact of the state's involvement in this matter is an identifiable, substantial, and compelling reason to support the durational departure, and this was not the typical case. This is not a situation where Mr. Porte was actively seeking customers. It was arranged by law enforcement when the CI told police they wanted to buy drugs. The record does not indicate that this is a situation, again, where he was affirmatively seeking out buyers. And so for those reasons, it is less serious than the typical offense. And we're
counsel,
asking.
Excuse me, is there any evidence in the record that Mr. Porte was aware that it was a controlled buy?
It does not appear that he was aware. When he entered the factual basis at the plea hearing, the question asked to him was, you know, he was contacted by an individual who asked to buy meth and then come to find out that individual was working for the police as a confidential informant. So there's no indication he knew that the informant was working for police at the time.
So then how does the fact that it was a controlled buy make the offense less serious than the typical offense when it appears that in this case, the amount that he sold was more than twice the amount needed for the second degree controlled substance charge?
It's less serious in the sense that the police, the law enforcement set the amount that they were going to purchase. The controlled, the confidential informant went to police and said that they would buy an ounce of methamphetamine from Mr. Porte or from would were seeking to purchase an ounce of methamphetamine and could do that. And so law enforcement went along with that. So the amount was set from the very beginning at that amount. You know, frankly, I think the threshold for a possession under a second degree is 25 grams. Here it was about 24 grams or just under 24 grams that he was alleged to have sold. So he wouldn't have even met the threshold for a second degree possession in this case, but for the sale that was solicited by law enforcement.
Is there any case law that suggests that a controlled buy, that fact makes the offense less serious than the typical offense?
There are a couple cases where the court has granted downward durational departures in controlled buy situations. I don't think it's been held that it always has to be a downward durational departure, but it is a factor that has played into other cases. I think I cited to Roberts and Vang in the brief. Those were both sales to law enforcement, or a Vang was a controlled delivery of a package.
Thank you.
If we were to adopt your argument that, and I think in Roberts and Vang, am I correct that it was the district court was persuaded by that argument and departed for that reason? I guess here the district court was not persuaded by that and did not depart. So if we were to adopt your argument and reverse the district court on that ground, would that effectively be a rule of law that would apply to everyone who is convicted based on a controlled by?
No, not necessarily, Your Honor. I think based on the facts of this particular case, that it would be appropriate in a dispositional or durational departure, is appropriate in this particular case, given that the fact and the circumstances here. This court has reversed other departure decisions by the district court and recently in a decision yesterday and a decision last week that was cited by the respondent here. So I think it doesn't necessarily create a rule of law, but it would be the appropriate decision based on the facts of this particular case.
It seems like the circumstances here are fairly, I think the facts that you have asserted, simply it was a controlled by the CI or the government determined either the amount of the money, the price, or the amount of the quantity, and they're of course related. Those circumstances seem to be present in almost every case where there's a controlled by. So I don't know can you spin out some hypothetical controlled bys where it would be less likely to be appropriate to depart downward than in this case?
Sure. So I think one of the things that stands out in this case is it was a single sale. Other controlled by situations are often multiple sales that law enforcement has set out. And this is just a single sale that Mr. Porte was not out soliciting the CI either. The CI didn't come to police and say, hey, Mr. Porte is trying to sell me some drugs. I can buy some from him. That's not what happened. This, according to the complaint in the record, the CI went to police and said, I think I can get some drugs from Mr. Porte and went and sought that out. So I think those two facts make this a little bit different than other potential scenarios.
In fact, wasn't there an intermediary between the CI and Mr. Porte? In other words, it seems like that makes the government's control of the controlled by, so to speak, less controlling than in other situations. The government did not target Mr. Porte. They had a CI, and I think they simply asked the CI, according to the allegations that we have. I don't know. Of course, the factual record is limited, but am I correct in my understanding of what I've said?
It's my understanding based on the complaint. And like you said, the facts in the record are fairly limited here, but based on what we can tell, it did go, the CI did go to a different person who then went to Mr. Porte and brought the CI to Mr. Porte to buy the drugs.
Okay, thank you.
If the court has no further questions, I'll just sum up, basically what it comes down to here is this offense is less serious than the typical offense because the elements of the offense were entirely controlled by law enforcement. It was a controlled by, it was a single sale, and Mr. Porte was not out soliciting buyers and affirmatively trying to sell drugs. And so for, I think, all of those reasons and the reasons cited in the brief, durational departure was appropriate here and the district court abused its discretion. We would ask this court to reverse and remand for resentencing and imposition of that durational departure.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Carrie Osowski. I am a senior assistant Olmsted County attorney, and I represent the state in this matter. I am asking the court to affirm the district court's decision. It was an appropriate sentence. It was a bottom of the box guideline sentence, and the court did not abuse its discretion in denying Mr. Porte's motion for a downward durational departure. Since Ms. Eitenauer discussed two cases, I want to also discuss two cases and point out how those support the state's position in this matter. The two cases that she cited were Roberts and Vang. There was law enforcement involvement throughout both of those cases, but not in the way that law enforcement was involved with the controlled buy with Mr. Porte. With the Roberts case, that was a joint recommendation of the parties. They agreed in that matter that he would receive a downward departure. It was not something that the state opposed. It was part of the plea negotiation. That case is simply not similar to the facts before the court today. In regards to the Vang case, again, different facts. With the Vang case, law enforcement intercepted a package that was being mailed. They observed that there were controlled substances inside the package, removed a portion of the controlled substance, placed in a different substance so that the weight would be approximately the same. And then they simply tracked that package as it moved along to the different parties and eventually was delivered to its final destination by Mr. Vang, the defendant in that case. Those are so factually dissimilar here that any comparison isn't accurate, especially as it relates to asking for a durational departure. I also want to respond to counsel's position that Mr. Porte was entitled to a sentence that would have been the presumptive sentence for a third degree offense. The state in this case, through law enforcement, through the confidential informant, purchased a first degree amount of methamphetamine. He purchased almost 24 grams. The minimum amount for a first degree sale is 17 grams of methamphetamine. Mr. Porte is not alleged to have sold anyone anything. He admitted through his plea that he sold the confidential informant 23.85 grams of methamphetamine. And then he was sentenced based on a second degree offense. The second degree offense amount is 10 grams of methamphetamine. Mr. Porte sold almost 2.5 times the amount of methamphetamine required for a second degree sale, and is now asking this court to decide that that sale, despite well exceeding a typical second degree sale, is substantially less than a second degree sale. And that argument, pardon the pun, it holds no weight whatsoever. The district court in this matter very appropriately considered only offense-based factors. The court looked at what he sold, how much he sold, and yes, looked at you sold it to a confidential informant. The district court also appropriately said, I don't think that there are any offender-based factors that I can consider here. The court said, yep, it looks like you maybe have some remorse. It looks as though you are perhaps improving your life. Mr. Porte talked about all of the activities that he completed while in custody after this offense occurred, but those are offender-based factors. This court very recently, just over 2 weeks ago, issued a decision, State v. Merrill, where the district court in that case said, you were dealing with some very hard things. You were dealing with the anniversary of the death of your son. You are struggling with addiction. A downward durational departure is appropriate. And this court said, no, those are offender-based factors. The only thing that a district court can consider when making a downward durational departure is offense-based factors. Again, here in this case, Mr. Porte's sale well exceeded the amount needed to reach a second degree sale amount. The court's
Can you address appellant's argument that the sale at issue here was less serious than the typical offense because it was entirely controlled by law enforcement and it was a single sale? And I'm not sure I heard you address that specific point yet.
And thank you for reminding me. That was actually something I had wanted to discuss when I brought up the Roberts and Vang cases as well. Those two cases also were single incidents observed by law enforcement. They were not repeated sales, at least according to the facts and the opinions in those matters. Appellant cites no legal authority saying that if a sale is controlled by law enforcement because the purchase was made through a confidential informant, that justifies a downward durational departure, that it makes the offense any less serious. this isn't a circumstance where Mr. Porte needed time to find someone to sell, you know, to give him methamphetamine that he could sell to this confidential informant. And in fact, that sounds like that's what that middleman was. Ms. Eitenauer says that Mr. Porte contacted someone else who then connected him, or that the CI contacted someone else, and that person connected the CI with Mr. Porte. That person, that connection, that intermediary, that would be the middleman. That would be the person where the district court could have said, like the district court said with Ms. Horstman, when appellant was arguing that that was a case that Judge Chase should have considered. Ms. Horstman was the middleman in that situation. Mr. Porte isn't the middleman in this situation. He had the methamphetamine and he was able to provide it to this confidential informant and sell them almost 24 grams of methamphetamine. He didn't say in his plea, well, I had to go and find someone to get it for me, or the person who connected me with Mr. Porte or with the confidential informant is the one who actually gave me the meth, and for whatever reason, I sold it to this person. He admitted that he sold almost 24 grams of methamphetamine to a confidential informant in exchange for $500.
Thank you.
The other argument that I want to make is that Mr. Porte very improperly argues statistics, and he also argues, as I mentioned, about other cases, local cases in Olmsted County. He says that other cases have been decided where the district court has granted a downward departure, and because other people have received departures, that he should be entitled to receive a departure too. I'm sure this court is very aware of the goals of the sentencing guidelines. They are uniformity in sentencing, proportionality, rationality, predictability. Giving wanton durational departures to everyone who asks for one is not a way to achieve those goals. The district court is allowed to exercise its discretion, but its discretion must be exercised within those guidelines, within that grid. Mr. Porte appeared before the court at sentencing with seven criminal history points. 6.5 of those points were from his criminal history, including multiple assaults, multiple other drug cases, and then 0.5 points for his custody status because he was on probation at the time of this offense. This is a D7 offense, and because he has the custody status, there's a 3-month enhancement. The district court very appropriately considered Mr. Porte's argument, at one point even leaving the bench to review other decisions that the court had issued, and the district court decided that there were no substantial factors, offense-based factors, that supported granting Mr. Porte a durational departure. The district court appropriately ordered a bottom-of-the-box sentence of 95 months, and the state asked the court to affirm the district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to start by pointing out the state was trying to differentiate the case Roberts from this case based on what was agreed to in the plea agreement. The plea agreement here contemplated a downward durational departure. The state knew that going into it, that a downward durational departure would be argued for. And so that is part of what happened in this case. As far as improper use of statistics and her argument that the Olmsted County cases were improperly being used, I think that those are important factors here because they provide a context for this request for a durational departure. Pointing out the other local cases that received downward departures in similar situations is important for the district court to consider. And the court, it appears, did consider those other cases. But in light of those cases, the district court abused its discretion by denying the motion for the downward durational departure.
Ms. Eitenauer, let's just assume for the moment that we should review those statistics. I believe the statistics showed that on a statewide basis, district courts departed for this type of offense 19% of the time. Is that right?
The statistic I cited was 21% for the state, I believe, and in Olmsted County, it was 18.75%.
So what does that say exactly? I mean, to me, that says perhaps that's what the Guidelines Commission intends. In other words, the majority of cases are in the presumptive range, and downward departures are rare. If I had to predict, I might have predicted a slightly lower number, but not by much. So, I mean, I'm wondering whether that data helps you much. It seems to me it shows that, you know, fewer than one in five people, or maybe about one in five people in his circumstances, get a downward departure. And so if the district court sentenced him like four out of five people, why is that an abuse of discretion?
Because of the facts of this specific case. I don't think that those statistics differentiate cases where law enforcement controlled the sale from other cases where a person was actually actively out seeking people to purchase the drugs from them. In fact, one of the cases in Olmsted County that they pointed to below was a case called Ormsby. And in that case, the defendant had 1,355 grams of a controlled substance and received a downward durational departure. And that person, it appears, was out actively making sales, whereas this was more of a passive situation where the buyer came to Mr. Porte, making it fall, I think, squarely within that one in five cases that where a downward departure is appropriate.
It seemed to me, Ms. Eitnauer, that at the sentencing hearing, the principal case argued was Horseman. And frankly, I was impressed that the judge took a break, went back, read that, because that had been his decision, and then came back and discussed it with counsel. I mean, would you agree that he distinguished that case with respect to sentencing from Mr. Porte's?
I would agree, Your Honor, that the judge did consider that case, and I think appropriately so. But I would disagree with the fact that the judge came out and said it was different from this case. I think Horseman was similar to this case. They're both have addiction issues. They both have a history of sale convictions. Horseman had a prior sale conviction recently. Mr. Porte has got a prior sale conviction. So I think in those senses, the cases were more similar than dissimilar.
Okay.
What about Ms. Osofsky's comment that Ms. Horseman was an intermediary, whereas Mr. Porte was the one who supplied the drugs that were sold?
I think that what's important here to keep in mind is he did plead guilty to the second degree sale. The second degree sale here was a controlled by, just like in Horseman, it was a controlled by. I'm not sure that Horseman was an intermediary, you know, even if she was an intermediary, the difference, I think, is not much. And this case is more similar than dissimilar in the fact that it's a controlled by a person who's dealing with addiction issues and is sought out by law enforcement. So for all of those reasons, we would ask that this court reverse the denial of the downward durational departure motion and remand for resentencing and imposition of the 57-month sentence. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments here today. The matter is submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory timeframe.